We're all familiar with the great names of science, the pioneers who made a vital breakthrough possible with their hard work and vision. It's less common in today's world to learn about individuals making those advances. More typically, it's a team effort, including hundreds of researchers contributing from around the world. Barry Bozeman, Regents Professor and Technology and Public Management Expert at ASU, has co-written a new book called The Strength in Numbers, The New Science of Team Science, and he's with me. So, Barry, how often are these science teams made up of hundreds of contributors, and have those even expanded as we've gone on?
It depends a great deal on the discipline. Nowadays, almost every research project is made up of teams rather than individuals, but in some disciplines, the teams are enormous. Particularly physics, which is probably the most extreme case when they have collaborators in the hundreds, literally. But even in other fields, even in the social sciences, the number of projects and papers and with collaborators and large teams has increased a great deal. Nowadays, about 94% of all published work is in collaboration, which is tremendously different than say, the 1950s and 1960s.
So what has caused that change to come about?
Several things. One thing that's happened is that work is advancing so quickly that it's difficult for any particular individual to stay on top of every element of the work. Related, work is now much more interdisciplinary, putting together people from biology and chemistry and physics and computer science to pursue many of the shared goals. And it's in addition to the interdisciplinary work, it's also the case that university faculty in particular are now more involved with industry. And so since passage of legislation in the 1980s, it's been much more easy for universities to engage with industry, and many universities encourage faculty in doing so. And that also expands the number of research objectives and also the size of the teams.
So has the size of teams expanded opportunities for people, but at the same time, has it caused a competition that may affect the research in some negative way?
Well, now that's an interesting question. I think we can certainly assume that it's expanded opportunities. It hasn't expanded opportunities evenly. Some people have more opportunities and are in greater demand, but I think probably on balance it's expanded opportunities a great deal. By the same token, there's inherent problems in working with larger teams, and the larger the teams, typically the more the problems begin to accelerate. So it cuts both ways. Now, to a large extent, though actually not in every case, collaborating is really an individual choice, and so individuals obviously think they're getting something out of it since they can always opt out, and sometimes they do. But one of the factors that is clearly telling us that people are feeling like they get something out of collaboration is just the great growth of collaborations and the choices that people are making to collaborate.
Has there been evidence of a type of team that really works, or a way of going about making this team, especially if you have researchers from different universities all across the world in some cases?
Well, yes. We've done a great deal of work on collaboration for now more than two decades, actually, and we've been gathering data of all sorts, interviewing people, having fill out surveys, doing case studies. And so we've spent a lot of time accumulating data about what works and what doesn't work so well. One of the things I can say is that every basic model of collaboration can work. Even ones that we don't particularly endorse can work. Many collaborations, probably too many, are authoritarian with one person calling all the shots. But that, too, can work in certain circumstances. In other cases, collaboration works because of trust and the fact that people have collaborated for a long time. So in many instances, there's just kind of a implicit knowledge of one another's activities, values, and preferences. But the model that we think works best, and we actually think we have some pretty good evidence for this, is what we call consultative collaboration, which is there's many aspects of this, but the most important part is simply not proceeding on the assumption that everybody agrees on objectives and values without testing that assumption and talking to one another all throughout the project. And it's easy to do that, especially in more hierarchical projects. Mm-hmm. And sometimes very experienced people forget that people who are in other fields, people who are younger, people who are not as experienced might have different values. And so it's not just a matter of steamrolling over people. It's a matter of making false assumptions.
When there are big awards passed out, do people feel like they get enough credit when there's a big collaboration? Does that come up?
It can come up, for sure. The award structure is different for just about every award, but it definitely comes up. Of course, the classic case was the DNA Nobel Prize with Watson and Crick, where there was really actually a number of people involved in that who probably thought they didn't get as much credit. The reason that's classic is simply because a lot of people studied it. It probably happens all the time. Most of the crediting issues do not involve big awards because there aren't very many big awards, but it does involve credit for publications, citations, and so forth, because as I'm sure you know, tenure and promotion are based to a very large extent on the ability to publish articles in peer-reviewed scientific journals.
Have we seen more women involved? Have we seen more people of color involved? And is there a way to measure the impact of that's effect on science teams and whatnot?
The questions are complicated, but on balance, it certainly seems that more diverse teams, in many respects, are better teams. That's one of the things that's driving collaboration, because there's all kinds of diversity. I mean, we can talk about diversity in terms of underrepresented minorities and women, but there's also diversity in terms of fields to consider, and diversity in perspectives, diversity in skills. So diversity is always an element. With respect to inclusion of women and minorities, it's probably fair to say that the trajectory is a little bit different, because minorities, underrepresented minorities, still remain woefully underrepresented in almost every field, and attacking that problem is difficult. We haven't, we meaning the scientific community, have not really succeeded in with that problem. We have had more success including women. And in many fields, women are beginning to approach parity.
Barry Bozeman is a Regents professor at ASU, and he's the co-author of the new book, The Strength in Numbers, The New Science of Team Science.